Are we on? Hello, my name is Emily Prisco, and you are on the air with GASP. GASP, or the Group Against Smog and Pollution, increases awareness and promotes advocacy around southwestern Pennsylvania's poor air quality. In this episode, we explore the idea of environmental justice by taking a closer look at the communities most impacted by pollution. We'll talk to a doctor, impacted communities fighting for a breath of fresh air, and two nonprofits rallying around communities that need their help. Hold your breath, because we're going on the fence line. Stay tuned. Joining me on today's episode is my lovely coworker, Jamin Bogie. He is GASP Policy and Outreach Coordinator.
Hello.
Hi, welcome. So we're talking about environmental justice today, and to make things a little spicy, I just want to start off with a definition here. So environmental justice is the belief that all citizens, regardless of ethnicity or socioeconomic class, should equally share in the benefits of environmental amenities and the burdens of environmental health hazards.
You're looking at race and income. Often you're looking at proximity to pollution sources, and you're trying to judge a community's ability to deal with these environmental threats. And if community is judged to have higher burden than others, that's where these environmental justice measures kick in.
So this is something we've really known about for decades. It's the environmental injustices of the world and of the country. And the environmental movement is really trying to do a better job of addressing it. Basically, once a community is identified as an environmental justice community, as maybe a community with less power, environmental organizations and now government organizations as well will come in and they'll try to make sure that these people are having a fair chance to attend meetings, that their voice is being heard, and that their needs are being considered in the decision-making process.
Right. We have almost 30 major sources of air pollution just in Allegheny County, and many of them are in communities that score high on the environmental justice scale.
Yeah, and so there are actually two scales that we look at in this region. So I guess on the bigger level, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection has the Office of Environmental Justice. And what they do basically is they define vulnerable communities as environmental justice communities. So basically they're not really looking at any pollution sources. They're more so just looking at race and income. And then on a more local level, we have a scale set up by the Allegheny County Health Department.
Right. The county health department takes into consideration more factors like proximity to diesel pollution or percentage of youth or elderly in your community.
Yes. The county scale takes into consideration pollution sources because air pollution is bad, which we know. So I talked with Dr. Ned Katire to tell us a little bit more about this. He is a pediatrician. He also is a writer on the Pedia blog and one of the founders of the Pediatric Alliance. He knows a ton about air pollution and, of course, its health effects, and he's passionate about the subject, so let's go to him.
Everyone is exposed to air pollution in some degree in this part of the country, and we all have to breathe 12 to 24 times a minute, depending on your age and your health status and your activity level. That's not negotiable, how much we have to breathe every day. Getting to know what their zip code is mm-hmm. is important because our patients don't necessarily live where we physicians live.
Yes, correct. Wonderful, excellent. Dr. Katire gets it. He's not only asking his patients about where they live and their own individual risks and things they can do in their own house, but he's looking at where's this pollution coming from.
Certainly highways are a big risk factor for children who play a lot outside. And then there are point sources of pollution. I live near the Mon Valley, and there's still a lot of steel making. There's the Claret and Coke facility. And there's quite a bit of industry that continues to pollute. The most important question to ask is, where do you live?
very good stuff here. Dr. Kattire's talking about something that you almost never have happened to you, I think. I've been to the doctor a bazillion times. The question has never come up. We all know they're busy, but we also know that proximity to air pollution sources can be a huge factor in your health issues.
Air pollution has cradle-to-grave health effects, and we've known this for decades, starting with complications of pregnancy and fertility issues. Preterm birth, low birth weight has been associated.
Birth defects have been associated.
Childhood cancer,
risks of developing
adult lung disease, heart attacks, strokes in adults, lung cancer, and mental health impact. And finally, about 7 million people on this planet die prematurely every year as a result of exposure to air pollution. And that includes tens of thousands of Americans every year. So air pollution has significant consequences on health from cradle to grave. And it's important that we recognize that. It's really not a secret anymore. Enough studies have been done to show this. And we really have to look at the point sources, the mobile sources, all sources of air pollution and say, well, what can we do to decrease this? Well, there are certainly things that we can do to prevent exposure, but why be exposed in the first place?
Yeah, when you step back and look at the bigger picture, it's not just one person with asthma here, one person with cancer here. It really is. If you consider it at the community level, you can't just address the asthma and you can't just address the cancer. It's all part of the same larger question. And NEDA is doing such an amazing job stepping back and looking at that. Our next guest on the show is Donna Frederick. She is a resident of Natrona, which is a town about 20 miles from Pittsburgh. And in her town, you really cannot forget that air pollution is the underlying cause of health issues. Within less than a mile of Donna's house, there are two major facilities, ATI, or Allegheny Technologies, and Harsco Metals. And both of these facilities impact Donna's life every day.
Natrona used to be its own little town. We had a post office, a fire department, you know, everything down here. We had grocery stores, everything. Then the township expanded to what we call is up on the hill where the elite live. So Natrona became a kind of a rundown, neglected town because they, you know, everybody wanted to focus their energies and everything up on the hill. So they started selling off all the houses down here. They all pretty much became rental properties. They had a lot of slumlords come in who didn't give a crap and just let the properties get run down. The township didn't care because there wasn't a lot of tax revenue coming from this area. The big money was coming in from prestigious houses up on the hill where the hospital is and all the businesses. And we take the brunt of Allegheny Technologies pollution and toxic fumes and excessive noise, but the commissioners just don't care.
As it turns out, 4 out of the 5 city commissioners live up on the hill. They don't see what Donna sees. They don't smell the fumes and they don't feel their homes vibrating.
Right now, I'm looking out my second story window, which the bedroom's never used because of all the excessive noise. You have to sleep in the back bedroom. Right now I'm looking out there and there's nitrogen tanks. And especially when it rains like it is now, there's masses and masses of this permeating over the fence and onto the street. Sometimes it gets so bad you can't even see. It smells like asphalt, that between that and wires burning. Everybody, almost every home in this town has a front porch. You'll never see anybody sitting on their porch. You can't because the stench is so bad. There was a time when I was sitting out there, and it looked like it was snowing. This was in July. All this white, fluffy stuff was falling out of the air, and we found out that it was slag residue from Harsco, They are a big problem in town. People up on the hill actually do complain about this because they can walk through their grass and their shoes are covered white.
The pollution has become unbearable for Donna, and she is determined to find proof of damage, which eventually she hopes to bring to court.
I just had my home tested from a lab in Ohio, and there's arsenic in the soil along with other toxins. There's in the siding was selenium, chromium, and now that I know that my home is toxic, I can never sell my house because I have to disclose that information now. By law, I have to tell them. So now who do you think is going to buy my home when you know that it's covered with toxins, and if it's outside, I can guarantee you it's inside my home. When we came to look at the house, I knew nothing about what a massive polluter they were. Nobody says anything about the northern part of Allegheny County. You know, everything that's publicized is about in Pittsburgh, surrounding Pittsburgh. There, you never hear anything about here. We had no clue.
We, as citizens, aren't the only ones letting ATI's persistent pollution slip past our notice. The facility is required by the Clean Air Act to have a permit, and it has now been 15 years that they have gotten by without one. This blatant disregard for the law by ATI, as well as the agency charged with enforcement, puts the citizens of Natrona at risk.
There have been 25 people that I know of have died from cancer just on my street. And nobody cares. That it's so hard to swallow that nobody cares about the people that you love and they're dying. It's just, I get so upset because it's like, who do you have to shake to get their attention? It's not like we're asking for anything that a normal person wouldn't want. Clean air to breathe. How about that?
What stands out to me from her story is frustration. She feels a lack of power. And that's part of what environmental justice tries to address. She feels that success and prosperity has gone up the hill, and it's left her and her neighbors to deal with the problems.
And it's kind of crazy to think that this is just about 20 miles from Pittsburgh. So she says that no one cares and no one really hears about their story. And I mean, it's kind of true. We're not really thinking about that. It doesn't affect us the same way it affects her.
And this is a story that's replicated all around Allegheny County.
Yeah, exactly. So if we go 20 miles south, we can see almost the exact same story playing out in Clairton.
My name is Melanie Mead. I've lived in Clairton most all of my life. I am currently working with the Clean Air Council as one of its leaders of 10, and I'm working on my doctorate in naturopathy. I am witness to the fact that a mother and daughter died of the same cancer within a year. I'm witness to the fact that a young man in his late 20s has been diagnosed with the disease his mother passed away from in his earlier life. And no one has made the connection with the Clairton Coke Works air pollution and the loss of lives. I am witness to this fact, and I believe that the Department of Public Health and the county executive need to pay close attention and give voice to the victims of this air pollution.
Melanie Mead lives in Clairton, and she is neighbor to the Clairton Coke Works, a facility which takes about 16,000 tons of coal each day and bakes it at extremely high temperatures to yield a product called coke, which is then used in the steelmaking process. Clairton Coke Works is the biggest coke-making facility in the U.S., and it repeatedly violates the law. Just like Natrona Steel Mills, the Clairton Coke Works is creating an obscene amount of pollution at the expense of its neighbors.
As a little child, we were brought in the house midday to wash off because the soot would have accumulated on us while we were outside playing. I look out my window right now and I'm looking right at it. I can see all the stacks every day. The scent that you smell, rotten eggs, burning rubber, some of the scent would stick in the back of your throat. and the sounds I hear. I mean, at 1 o'clock in the morning, between the train and the loud banging.
Like Donna, Melanie is uncomfortably close to industry, and she thinks about the dangers it poses for her and her family every day. Meanwhile, Claritin Copeworks has violated the law 6,700 times in the past 3.5 years alone, and paid millions of dollars in fines, essentially pocket change to them, to get regulators off their back. Still, Melanie says the blame doesn't belong to U.S. Steel alone.
The people who work in the mill get to leave and go home to cleaner air. We have less than 1% of our community hired in the Claritin Coke Works. But U.S. Steel is a business. We can blame the business because their business was more important than the lives of the people working in the business and those who lived around it. But then the next brunt would be the government body of people who are elected to advocate and represent the community. If they aren't at the table to have this discussion, then that means that there isn't anybody representing the people. There have been laws that state we deserve better quality air, and there are rules to enforce it, and we are still unable to make sure that they are being enforced.
So, naturally, Melanie looks to the people elected to stand up for her interests. Like Donna, she begins her prodding at the city level.
I initially started attending the city council meetings, but after watching so many others have issues and seeing the mayor and the city council say, moving on, next subject, I began to get frustrated. So I did contact the county, and I've made reports. They don't get back to you. There are things that we as a community can do to make a change. We just have to have the support of those in charge. No one has made any demands to shut down the Claritin Coke Works. We have questions, and we have needs, and we want to meet at the table to discuss them.
Well, hearing these stories is, it's both frustrating and inspiring. It's frustrating because they list the people that they counted on to protect them, people in charge, whether it's local officials, regulators, people at the different companies, and one by one, they've let these citizens down, they feel. And that's the frustrating thing. So these people then have to become air pollution experts. They have to know words like selenium and chromium and do soil testing on their own property, or
they're really fending for themselves.
And that's the inspiring part, that they realize what's happening to them, and they don't accept it, and they're fighting back. And they're, you know, there are a lot more of us than them, and we just need to unify and say what we want. And if we don't get it, you're out.
That's a lot of what environmental justice is. It's the fact that these communities don't have as much power, and that's why they are often aren't heard. So it takes a lot to really be heard, and they kind of have to band together. As they can't just be one person in the community who's really upset,
right,
who's getting their soil tested. It has to be everyone.
Because, yeah, these communities might not have a lot of money. They might not have a big tax base. These people might not have a lot of free time to pull on the coats of their legislators, but they do have votes. And when they vote on these issues, then real change can happen.
Oh, of course. I mean, as Melanie said, she's active every day. She mm-hmm. joins a nonprofit, so it's a lot more than just voting.
Yeah, you don't just vote and then turn off.
You have to show up and talk to your city commissioners and your, you know, the people who represent you, even when they don't want to hear from you. You know, you show up, you request meetings, and that's what Melanie's doing, and that's what Donna is doing.
Or, if you don't see anyone around you that is championing these causes, maybe that someone's you. So Melanie said that her and her other concerned citizens want to meet and be at the table. And Allegheny County Clean Air Now, or ACAN, is a group that formed that was at the table.
Yes, and I was lucky enough to attend a play at Carnegie Mellon. It was called The Fox of the Grape, and it was all about the Chenango Coke Works and its closure in January of 2016. Jordan Barsky, who is the playwright, He organized a talk back with the members of ACAN afterwards, and he was kind enough to share the audio of it. Up next, we're going to hear from Thaddeus Popovich. He's going to tell us all about the group's beginnings.
We started off as a small group, and it's fascinating. We started off in a coffee shop. It was called the Fire Escape because it was next to the fire department. That's where we had our first meetings. There would be 10 of us thinking about, so what do we do next?
So the first person to speak there was Thaddeus Popovich. He and I joined GASP at the same time many, many years ago. We joined the Pollution Patrol, where we learned all about air pollution sources and what citizens can do. And we ended up joining the board of GASP together.
When was that?
2008 or 9 or so. We were on the board together for a few years. And ACAN, a lot of its core members, used to meet on the grounds of the Shenango Coke Works. The employees would bring them in to update them, to answer their questions, and GASP sent representatives as well. And so that went on for a while. Eventually, those citizens quit. They felt like it was just a waste of their time, that they were giving them nice-sounding answers, mm-hmm. but not really seeing enough progress.
It took us a long time to realize that we were really fighting the health department. The health department, whose mission is to protect the health of the county residents, was actually in more of a pay-to-play mode with Shenango. Instead of fining Shenango for each violation, they would accumulate the violations and create what was called a consent decree, where they would have a larger fine, but still not very large, maybe a couple $1 million, but for a company that was producing 360,000 tons of coke a year, it was a drop in the bucket. So Shenango would go on, violate the consent decree, there'd be another consent decree and another one. When we would go to public meetings, we would actively call out the health department about being the problem.
Calling out the health department was a huge part of ACAN's strategy, and its members never shied away from the opportunity to do it.
So I went to the meeting this night in Avalon. The Allegheny County Health Air people were there giving an effect. She was giving us a class on coke making, and I got so angry. And I stood up. I said, can you close this plant down? Can you get an answer? And I stood up again. I said, do you have the authority to close this plant down with all the violations? She still didn't answer. Yes. She didn't say yes.
These confrontations were often public, sometimes with the hopes of attracting the press, but they were also heartfelt and happened even when ACAN was meeting with the health department in private.
In one of our regular meetings with the health department, Jim Thompson, I'll mention names, the director of the air quality group, I was sitting right across the table from him, and I understand the EPA regs a bit. And I said, you are designated by the EPA to keep our air clean for our citizens, for us at this table, right? He says, yes. He says, you have the ability to up the ante, raise the bar, so that the plants don't pollute as much, right? He said, yes. And I said, so let's do it then, right? What would happen? And I answered the question for him to begin with. The air will get cleaner, won't it? He said, yes, but you know what? Industry will be on my back. You sort of knew that, but when it's told you right in your face, you don't matter. Industry matters. CMU gave us our own citizen's camera, so 24/7 it was watching the plant, and it got archived. There was a grad student,
Yen Chai,
he developed an algorithm that would capture their worst moments, and they put it into a split screen in our last community meeting before the shutdown, and there were so many egregious events, and we had the EPA clean director of air quality from Philadelphia come in, and he and the health department were sitting right in front of that screen the whole meeting. He stood up at the end and said, this is totally unacceptable. So the head guy from the Region 3, so that was a quote that was heard around the world, if not Pittsburgh.
In the middle of December of 2015, pretty much out of nowhere, DTE, which is the company that owned Shenango, announced that they were closing.
Okay, so success, right?
Well, if you're talking about ACAN members that wanted less pollution in their community, I'm sure a lot of them would see that as a success.
Right. So Melanie and Donna both explicitly say that their goals are not to close down the facilities next door. They just basically want them to follow the law. Is that part of the reason that Shenango decided to close down?
Oh, I think for sure. They said, DTE said that they had lost their customers and they did not foresee getting more customers in the near future due to slowdowns in their market. But it was an old facility and it was past its lifespan, and they're dirty facilities as it is. So it would have taken millions and millions of dollars to invest into that place to make it able to obey the laws, and that probably factored into their decision.
So while Donna and Melanie and Gasp don't normally advocate for facilities to get closed down, this was a real success for ACAN. And since it's closed down, the Allegheny County Health Department and researchers at Carnegie Mellon have really been paying attention to the changes in the area. And so far, they like what they see.
They found with the community monitors that the average benzene recorded dropped 37%. Benzene's a known carcinogen. A couple who belong to ACAN at their home in Avalon, 52%.
And the asthma rates for elementary school children in the local school district have dropped. One of the measurements is what they call PM2.5, which is the micron size of the very small particles, sometimes called soot, that get into your lungs, gets into your bloodstream, gets into your brain. That's how small it is. The reduction there is 10%, which is significant.
Particulate matter is linked to higher rates of asthma and heart disease, so it is really no surprise that in a recent study by the Allegheny County Health Department, they found that asthma and COPD have dropped by 38% in the region, and ER visits for cardiovascular disease have decreased by 26.5%. ACAN members are feeling good.
People are a lot more optimistic, and actually it's nice if you walk around the street, people occasionally say, thank you, it's just so much better here.
ACAN remains strong, and they're looking now at other facilities on the same island that are affecting their health. They're looking at solar panels and putting in renewable energy, so they're not stopping. They're inspired, and they're continuing to drive progressive change in their communities.
And this is a group that just started in a coffee shop, so they are still a small group, but they are making a big change. So actually in Pittsburgh is Homewood Children's Village.
Yeah, Homewood Children's Village is another example of what can happen when individuals that might be feeling alone or frustrated or angry, when those individuals come together, just like ACAN, and realize that united they can have a lot more power and bring about real change.
Right now, I think Homewood has a lot of good things going for it, a lot of assets, a lot of resources, but you can't overlook the fact that we are right on the busway, and then we have the railroad tracks, and so that is an issue that we face, and from what I know of Power and Homewood with who owns property, we don't have a lot of homeowners, and that's usually how we will say somebody has power or not, because if you own the home, a developer or somebody trying to move into that territory to do whatever is going to look at you more seriously. And right now, we do have a high renter population. Mm-hmm. So if a renter comes to the table and says the same thing that a homeowner says, it's taken a little bit differently because you're a renter. You know, you might not even be able to afford your lease next time it comes up or whatever. So you're not my main concern. But if you live here, I'm going to pay more attention to you.
So that first person to speak there was Natalie Jellison. She's Homewood Children's Village's program coordinator for the Office of Child and Community Health. I'm really excited that she brings up renters here because it's a theme that we've heard from both Donna and Melanie. A key part of environmental justice is an understanding the balance of power, in this case of renters, in a given situation and then rebalancing the scales.
She's saying that renters aren't taken seriously, that the property owners or the landlords are, so they're working hard to flip that and to give power back to the people that actually live there.
So aside from not having power on the community level, they don't even have power to make adjustments to their own home because they don't own those homes. A lot of people, if they have a house, they can make the updates to protect themselves against air pollution on the inside.
Sealing up cracks with caulking or spray foam to keep outside pollution from coming in. Or what kind of filter are you using on your heating and AC system? These are people that might not have the time or the money or even the permission to, you know, they're not allowed to fix up the places they're renting in some cases. So these are people that have bigger burdens to face when trying to deal with air pollution.
And we're trying to change that. And it is the reason why we have the Leadership Institute, where we are equipping our residents with information about sustainability, about green technology, about climate change, about the political process, about economic development, about community development, understanding the power of these phenomena, and also recognizing the power of the process, because there is a process to building and making change. When I think back on movements like the Civil Rights Movement, like the gun control movement that we're living through now, and even globally, it may have looked like they didn't have power when they were individuals just talking about an issue. But once people come together and are equipped with information and knowledge of how a political system works, how the economic development decisions are made, that's when we can actually make something happen, make something different, make something change. And frankly, that's what I'm here for.
So Dr. Shanna Tharp-Gilliam talks about this process that Homewood Children's Village has come to rely upon. And she uses this example. She uses asthma as an example. So basically, they saw that a lot of students were missing school. They connected that to asthma. Once identifying that problem, they teamed up with the University of Pittsburgh and they did a study. They figured out basically what the problems were in the community. Then they equipped the community to deal with those problems. They developed an intervention plan. And then from there, they went to policy. So that's like the general framework that they've used, that they've figured out as successful in their community.
Identify the problem, get experts to confirm the causes, come up with an action plan, and put it into play.
I feel that we're building muscle. We're building capacity so that we can flip the page and rebalance the scales of power, you know, back into the hands of the community members.
So Homewood Children's Village formed in a depressed neighborhood to really make a difference in the lives of children. But they realized that to do that, they need to educate and empower adults. They need to address environmental issues. They need to bring people together around hope for the community, because all of these things are connected. Homewood is 98% Black, and nearly 40% of its population in some areas are under the poverty line. Whether intentionally or not, communities like these, like Natrona, like Clareton, they're targeted, they're forgotten, and they're left behind. Allegheny County is changing, and it is our job as residents to make sure it's the type of inclusive change we hope to see.
We can't leave 30, 40, 50% of the population behind and still be a successful, international, sustainable city. People who may be disenfranchised may not have as much power in our community. So the idea of making their lived experience on par with what we would call the majority population, that's what I think about when I think about environmental justice.
So regardless of where you are, whether it's in a city or in a more rural environment, there are environmental injustices happening.
And we saw throughout this episode, they're called environmental justice communities because they're happening to a community of people. You're not alone. People around you are experiencing the same thing. And there are ways to join together and to do something about it. And we heard a few of those in this episode.
Yeah, ACAN and Homewood Children's Village are both great success stories. They really did come together, they rallied, and they're working on solutions. And there's not just one single solution. It's not just, oh, Shenango closed, now we're done. It's a solution that we all need to work towards together. Wait, hold on. What's that noise? What is that? I think it's our call to action alert. In a world of environmental injustices, we need to come together. Whether it's you and your neighbors starting an organization in your local coffee shop, or coming together to support an organization that already exists, everyone has the right to clean air, and we need you to join the fight. Donate to GASP or check out some of our other partners. There's the Clean Air Council, which Melanie Mead mentioned. There's Women for a Healthy Environment, Grounded Technologies, ACAN, and Homeward Children's Village. All of these groups could use your help. For more information and for notes, check out our show notes online. You've been listening to On the Air with GASP. For this episode, we'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Ned Gattire, Donna Frederick, Melanie Mead, ACAN, and Homeward Children's Village. We'd also like to thank Carnegie Mellon playwright Jordan Barsky for his help in obtaining audio of ACAN. This podcast is funded by the Colcom Foundation. Learn more and get notes from this episode at gasp-pgh.org/media. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and review us on iTunes or Stitcher, and stay tuned for our next episode in 1 month. We'll see you then.